This episode does contain some language like so use your discretion.
The following has been produced by PutThemInASong.com.
My name is Shane Yoder. I write songs for a living. And every day, I hear stories transform into songs. Now you can too.
Welcome back to The Root Note, you crazy kids.
That's dumb.
Welcome back to The Root Note. You know, when things don't go quite to plan, you got a good plan B, right? And in the restaurant business, plan B was just pretty much throw stuff on the plate. It doesn't matter how it looks. I'm not going to do that. The plan for season four, we'll just say we lack the content for that. So I'm going to do something I've always wanted to do. I'm going to put out an album. So the next few episodes are going to be some behind the scenes of the songs that I would like to put on the album. So that should be fun. let's hope. But first, this is the first time I met Josh and Kate. They came over to the house one evening to do a photo shoot with my wife. We ended up recording this podcast and grilled out, and we ended up watching Bill Burr's new special, and it got a lot of heat from different groups. We sat there and laughed together. We thought it was really clever the way he went about that. And I say that to say, I've always admired the mind of a comedian, how they can see something that everybody sees and tell a different story. And as a songwriter, that's what I admire and would like to do. And Kate and Josh are a lot like that, I've come to find out. They're great songwriters, they're great people, and they have a great band. This is Hastings and Co.
Chrissy, if you want to speak, you have to raise your hand so I can move the mic.
Okay. Tell us when we're live on the note.
This is how this is going to go.
Live on the root note. Got it. We're ready when you guys are. If this isn't going to be a spitfire thing, I'm going to make out with your dog in between.
All right, so you're the Kate Hastings band.
No, not even close.
No.
But we'll take it.
What is it?
You used to be.
Yeah, we used to be
Nobody told me.
We were tired. Now we're Hastings and Co., but thinking about taking on a third member.
Are we?
This one.
Oh.
Josh is like pleasantly confused. If anybody was going to join, I would say, like, if we were ever going to add a member, it'd definitely be, wouldn't you say, Austin Skinner? He's as much a part of, mostly he's my road entertainment when we're on the road. He just goes on monologues. That's our guitarist. It's
also my best friend from college that moved to Nashville with me.
But I've adopted him now as mine.
Yeah, and they have a very similar personality, and so they both make fun of me.
No, we don't. Anyway, we're all turning over a new leaf in the band where it's Josh Empowerment Month.
Yeah, I've witnessed this in person. Josh is the butt of a lot of jokes.
Well, here's the thing about Josh. He walks into them, and then his jokes back to you are dad jokes. So it's just like, I feel like you set yourself up a little, and the way that you drive with your head forward and just so annoyed with anything that might get in the way of the drive, that's not how most people in a band travel. We're here for the party, and as long as we're not driving, we are partying in the back.
So you're the driver then, Josh?
I tend to be the driver,
yeah.
Because that's probably how I exercise any control that I can.
Yeah. There you go. That when I was touring, I was the driver.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, me and one other guy. We always like to go night shift, though. Mm. Night shift is the way to go if you're driving.
Dude, for some reason, I have this, like, closet.
You heard it here, folks. There's an announcement coming out on this podcast.
Oh, my God. I have this closet fascination.
He did it again!
With, what if everything just went south? Would I ever want to, like, drive a semi across the U.S.?
Most of the time, the plan is to go south.
You lost me.
Yeah, like, you lost me too.
Like driving south.
Oh, he was talking about with the band.
Oh, I get it. Nothing's going south. I'm tired of this talk. If you want to be a truck driver.
It depends on how this podcast goes.
Yeah, be my guest. Be a truck driver.
All right. So you're Kate Hastings.
Not even close.
Say it again then.
I'm Kate Hastings.
No S on the end.
Yeah.
And I'm Josh Beal.
And together we form Hastings and Co.
Oh, Hastings and Co.
Yeah. All of our socials are... All of our socials... Where are you at? Help me out.
All of our socials are at Hastings and Co.
Right. Very detailed. But our website is www.hastingco.com. And so at one point, Austin, who we talk about, our loving guitar player, asked Josh, like, so what part of the name, like, are you the ampersand? Are you the co? Because I guess with salt and pepper, right?
There was originally and they had salt, pepper, and they had the n.
The n, and apparently, like, the apostrophe of salt and pepper is still, like, doing things, so honestly, like, this might be a better career for Josh. He can carry on as Co from now until the end of time. You might just see, like, Co, the band. I don't know. You know, the future is looking bright, but it is still a mystery.
Maybe just go with Co.
No.
You could just call us Co and...
Hastings and No. Yeah, No feels right. No, wow, that fits in the pocket. Cool, it's just like songwriting.
Fits in your pocket. Fits in your Carhartt pocket tee.
Oh, wow. Mm. So...
So, okay. I don't technically know you.
We know
each other.
This is
the first time we met. We knew correct. Each other.
Yeah.
I know you because of my aunt.
Giddy up, yep.
Yeah, she wanted me to hook up with you.
Yeah, well, and here we are.
No.
His wife's over here giving a weird finger signal. No. Not sure for those of you that can't see us while we're not live. Just want the audience to fully understand the motion that was just made from the corner of the room. Yeah, she wanted us to meet. I think we had moved to Nashville a few years apart or something, and she knew I was down here riding or something. I don't really remember, but we showed horses together for a long time. And yeah. I was the full-on dog and pony show then, so I'm only like a partial shit show now. Can you say shit show on here?
Sure.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
We love Don.
So yeah, that was the extent of my knowledge of you.
And then, fast forward to a couple years later.
Yeah, and then Chrissy and I started working together when we started the Kate Hastings Band, and then I found Josh. Worst day of my life. And here we are. Just kidding.
For the audience, Kate rolls eyes.
Yeah. For the audience, Josh laughs. Can we also talk about Josh's attire right now?
Yes.
Mostly, he has on a Cracker Barrel bald eagle hat, of which I tried to sell to him. I don't work there, but I should. In the gift shop. I really like their things, and there's no greater honor than someone walking up and being like, what are you wearing, you know, at an award show, and you're like, Cracker Barrel. You know, so I was like really trying to push the brand heavy on Josh because like the long knit sweater doesn't seem like red carpet appropriate. So I found this bald eagle hat and I was like, wow, that's aggressively American, which is a slogan that we use on a bunch of our shirts. And you tried it on and you were not having it. And then I think it was like a week later, you come strolling into my apartment.
Wearing it.
And I was like, okay, first of all, awesome. Second of all, that was not your idea. Third of all, what are you wearing?
But didn't we? Were we just talking in private about how it, you know, it has to be my idea?
Oh, yeah. That's the thing about what Cancer men, like of the astrology sign Cancer. We were just...
Which Shane's a Cancer.
So y'all, like... I don't know anything about this, but Chrissy told me before this podcast that they have to have their own ideas.
Yeah. So like Kate was describing can I say a significant other? We can edit it out. Kate was describing someone in her life and
be special
radio edit. the way she described him, I just instinctively said, is he a Cancer? Which I also don't invest a lot into astrology, but Shane happens to be a Cancer, and I have found that men, Cancer men, or Cancers, but mainly the men, have this very specific thing in common, and Kate will tell you now what it is.
And I feel like your listeners are going to be like, no, that's just all men, because I feel you know what I mean? Because it's like, come to think of it, I don't know that I've ever dated a man that like didn't have to have an idea to execute. Like, it had to be his. You can plant the seed, water it a little, but he's got to grow it himself, you know?
Yep.
Farming reference there.
Farmers.
We're very on rural. On brand, yeah. We talk a lot about being on brand.
Well, what is your brand?
Trashy.
Nash Trash.
Yeah. I would say it's like... you know, I'm really, really, really invested into, and I know Josh is too, like, the specific, I wouldn't say rules, but structure of Nashville songwriting. I think it's so interesting. It feels very, it's a puzzle almost, and it's a very, like, clear-cut formula of how really successful songs chart, and the way that they chart, and how long they chart, and the message that they say. I think in pop writing, you have like this loose forum where you can just kind of write whatever you want. It doesn't really matter. And with country, you know, there's like a very specific format in different types, but the way the story is told is very structured. And so I thought that was so, that's very Nashville. I think the way we write is very Nashville, or the way we try to write. But the trash part comes from, you can't take away where it came from. And I'm proud of it. I mean, Howard's IGA, that's my grocery store. Pretty proud. Speedway, that's my gas station.
I had a cow in my senior picture.
Right. And yeah, funny thing about that is we went to the Key West Songwriters Festival, and Josh has this like very awkward picture. Like, explain it. It's so bizarre.
It's a picture of me at 17 years old for my high school senior picture. And I brought a probably 2-month-old, you know, calf into the photography studio, and I'm there with a bright white background with a big column, and I'm dressed in a 3-piece suit, and I'm there with a little Holstein calf, and it's become pretty infamous among anybody who knows me.
Yeah, Nashville people, imagine the Parthenon. And then a random dairy feeder and a man in a suit. It's so disturbing.
Did you show cows?
I did.
You did?
I actually, I started 4-H when I was 9.
Okay.
That's the age.
Yeah, that's the
Were
age.
You a clover bud, though? Because I was a clover bud at 8.
I was not a clover bud.
Late bloomer.
Yeah.
See, we had, 4-H was big in our town, but I never did it.
What?
Yeah, I never did it.
I
grew up on a dairy farm, and I was there, and we were always making forts out in the woods and underneath tree stumps in the cow pasture. Like, that was my childhood, essentially.
And somehow you like escaped 4-H?
Yeah, I never. That wasn't a mandatory thing, was it?
I mean, I didn't know that it wasn't a thing, honestly, until I moved here. There's a lot of things, like, I didn't know you could walk to a restaurant until I moved here. Mind blown.
Yeah,
in my first apartment, I was like, are you kidding me? I can get this salad to go, and I can walk there.
Yeah.
This was mind blown.
It's actually dangerous for my bank account.
What, walking?
Being close to everything. I have Chick-fil-A down the street from me. Like, it's
Yeah, dangerous. Josh lives in the hood, so it makes sense. Radio edit. Yeah, I didn't know until I moved here, truly, that there was an option to not do 4-H. It just was like, you just did it. It wasn't, I'm glad I did, but it was never an option. It just was what you did from 8 to 18.
Where'd you grow up?
New Carlisle, Ohio.
Is that, where is that
The... The friend of mine that Chrissy referenced earlier told me recently it's Southwest Ohio.
You don't know?
Maybe that's not what he said. Maybe you said southeast. I didn't know what a Rand McNally was until last year. So I know that it's like a little bit farther than Cincinnati from here.
A little
here.
Bit farther.
Yeah.
Okay.
About it's an like hour and a half.
It's like an hour north of Cincinnati.
Yeah, like Dayton area. Sandwiched between Dayton and Springfield.
Have you ever been to Western Maryland?
Who?
Where Don lives?
No.
No.
I actually have a friend that's from Maryland, and I didn't even know that was a state. I thought it was a city. So I was like, yeah. Wow.
We need to start introducing Rand McNally's, apparently.
Who?
Yeah.
I one time made the joke, we were covering, and the funny thing is my degree's in biology, and I don't know that we ever looked at a map. Like, I know that sounds funny, but none of my courses require that you know any geography. Like, yeah, I can tell you...
I can tell you one specific course that what? Required... Geography.
Well, I've never... I wasn't ever required to take geography. Like,
really?
No.
Even in high school.
I mean, okay. First
Shane
of all,
really
let's...
where we go. I went to Indiana schools. He feels the same way about Indiana schools.
No, I'm interested in this because I thought my school was pretty... We had 100 people...
Yeah, same.
In my graduating mm-hmm. class.
Yeah.
Right?
Relatable.
So.
On brand.
I thought my school was small. Hers was, what, twice as... Chrissy's was twice as big?
Yeah. I graduated with, like, 600 people in my class.
600 wow. people? My dating pool would have been awesome.
See,
it's like, my life would have played out.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Actually, maybe not. I probably...
My dating pool still wasn't great. I would have been cool.
I'm sure we had it in high school, but it's funny. I have a brother that's 11 months younger, and he always says that I'm a bit of an absolutist. Like, I like something, and then I like it to the point of loving it, and that is it. And so I think from a pretty early age, I knew, like, music, theater, that kind of thing, and then science were really, like, my peaks of interest. And so I never probably paid attention to anything but those two subjects.
Well, like clouds.
What do you mean?
Science.
Like
what kind of science?
I really, really liked, I mean, obviously I went for biology. Specifically, I liked the medical portion of it. Okay. You know, I like the inner workings of a cell, the human body, anatomy, stuff like that. Clouds are fine. I don't hate clouds.
I'm for them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm, speaking of it, exactly. I'm pro cloud. I have no idea what my iCloud is, but like I have a serious problem. Get it?
Oh,
and it's a cumulus.
Speaking of dad jokes.
Yeah, I was gonna say, who tells you dad jokes?
Serious problem.
So you went to college?
Yep, I did.
Biology?
Yep.
You did.
I did. I wish I had something to report other than wish it wouldn't have. Like, my friends were partying and I had to study because it was like not like organizational leadership, which not knocking on those kids, but they seem to be able to knock back a lot more drinks than the biology kids and still pass. So
yeah.
There was something about like 10 p.m. lab that would really, really mess up your drinking habits in college. So I don't feel like I had the normal party fun, and maybe I took it too serious, but I don't feel like I had as normal of a college experience as maybe some of my friends did, because I did take my degree and like the pursuit of possibly going to medical school so serious. And at the same time, that's right when I started consistently going to Nashville to write, and it just, I got bit by the bug and I liked it more. And I figured I can always go back and do something, but this just seemed like this very, very small field that you could possibly be good at. And even if you were good at it, you could fail yourself by an inability to make connections or an inability to maintain relationships. And I thought, or an inability to brand, or now an inability to run social media. And so there were all these like multi facets. And I think I just like a challenge. And I already like had been in love with songwriting, but I thought, my gosh, this is probably my world. Like, even when you made it, you could make it further. So it's just like a constant daily challenge, and I really enjoy that. The only bigger challenge to me than med school is songwriting and trying to be successful or relevant as a songwriter. And honestly, I think going to med school now would be a breeze.
Do you dissect your songs?
Oh.
Like, are you very tedious?
Ask Josh. I don't mind seven writes on the same song. It seems to bother everyone around us.
I mean, if it's... I feel confident enough about the song and the direction, then yeah, I'll take as long as we need to. Sometimes you have a song and you work on a write and two writes and three writes on it, and you're like, oh, let's just put this to...
Shoot the dead horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Put her down. Gimp
horse. Shoot the dead horse.
I mean, I hate to bring up the carpet, but... Go on, put her down. It's not well. I think, though, we're speaking within, like, a year of having really found who we are. I mean, and I think that's a daily reprieve. That's something that you find more of every single day.
How long have you two been working together?
Probably 5 or 6 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the exact year.
And this crazy mother effer will pull up text messages from the time you met because they're on his iCloud and bring them up at sushi, and it's creepy. But we love you.
I mean...
This thing's leaking.
Well, I've sprung a leak, y'all, for the audience. There's a water jug behind us, and it's currently leaking.
I mean, real bad.
Real bad.
There's a puddle under there.
It's okay.
Isn't that where Kate spilled it before?
That's where I peed earlier. I, like,
Kate
wasn't sure.
Anything.
I thought she spilled the
water. No, I got close, but I actually...
She did not fail us. Edit this out.
Or no. I will say, well, something interesting that happened to me is I was, we write a lot with a girl named Priscilla Block and Sarah Jones, and to me, most of the songs that we're going to release within the next year, they are the co-writers on, and we were all sitting around one night, and Sarah and Priscilla have a similar relationship to Josh and I. They've been together a long time. They've kind of figured each other out. Sarah backs Priscilla and in her career, and they were going through Priscilla's old songs, and they were, you know, laughing about some of the earlier stuff she had written and singing along to it. And she was like, oh, and remember this phase? And I was like, and they were like, yeah, and they would reminisce on it. And I said, well, let me show you some of the earlier stuff that I wrote that Josh hates. And so I brought up these songs I had written when I first got to town, like I Love Boys That Drive Tractors, titles such as My Brand of Man. And I was telling them about the lyrics to them, and they were like, well, at least like you've been relatively consistent in lyrical content for the past decade. And I thought, that is either really great or the damning part to our band.
I mean, I think in a sense we've just honed who we are, who you are, and figured out how to better express that.
Yeah.
In a way that people can better understand or relate to or get on board with.
Kate, do you write most of the songs or come up with the ideas?
I think I'm the ideas person and you're sort of the nuts and bolts person. Like, does that feel right or no?
In a way, like, I think we're still figuring out our dynamic, even years later, of exactly how we write best.
Because it's happened all different ways.
But, like, we had the idea for the song and for the single we're getting ready to put out, called Brunch Drunk. And we talked about the idea, and then I went back home, and I literally, like, went through every term relating to brunch, came up with what words rhymed with the words that I thought we would probably use, any relevant terms, and came in with pages of, you know, quote, research.
And then I just said, this is shit.
No, I mean, we came into that write with Priscilla and Sarah, and it was a decently quick write.
It took a couple writes to fix it.
Yeah, but we had a large chunk of it done in the first day, and I had like partial lines or two lines at a time written, and then we just kind of a lot of the discussion in the room was just kind of piecing it together so it all gelled. But
and I think too, like, we both lost our fathers in the last year, and for me, the loss of my dad significantly shifted the way that I wrote. I think that I'd had a lot of ideas and what you would what Sarah Jones calls Kate's intellectual property, which is a shared note that we all have on our phones of like ideas that I'll have, and there were a lot of really weird ones and really trashy ones, and ones that like such as brunch drunk or things like that, like little phrases that I'd really really loved, but felt like maybe I was trying to be like something that I wasn't. Like, if all of these hooks were existing and I was in this phase of my life where I just want to have fun and I'm not super, I'm not concerned about getting married right now. I'm not concerned about settling down. I'm in a phase of life where I just want to enjoy it. And yeah. I've realized how short it is. I started bringing these hooks in the room and I mean, we got eye rolls for sure. But once we were able to like write out the idea, it started working. And I told our publicist and friend, Elise Anderson, I was like, you know, I think I'm like known for wearing tutus. And I was like, I'm not going to abandon the tutu. But really what I wear daily is like jean shorts and a Carhartt tee. So I feel like if I could start wearing that on stage, maybe some people could relate. And it just has become this year of like owning who I am and having fun and not being sorry for it, which has been honestly the most success we've probably had. And you've like, I think too, loosened up. We just used to take ourselves maybe a little too serious.
Yeah.
And you know, you have writers now like Hardy and Morgan Wallen who they just go out there and it's like, whether it's branded and that's not really who they are, I mean, they're owning it 2,000% and it's impossible to go watch them and not believe it. So I just don't think, the past stuff was disingenuous. I just think that maybe I was like forgetting a huge part of myself, which is I really like parties and I really like bringing people together and I really like hosting parties. And I really think that a lot of weird things are funny. So I think that it's funny that sunscreen is SPF. Like, I think it's hilarious that Lotrimin has Lotrimin AF on the end of it, which obviously means antifungal, but like Lotrimin AF. Like, it just, that kind of stuff is funny to me. And Brad Paisley made a whole business out of putting that in song. So we're just exploring that avenue. I think I've been writing consistently lyrically since I was 17. Like, I've always been very proud of the farm I grew up on and the life my dad helped build for our family. I've always been a fan of the small town since they kind of like got behind me long before Absolutely. I could get anyone in Nashville
yeah.
to listen.
Yeah.
But what I think I was leaving out was like maybe the more raw side, the person that probably drinks too much sometimes, or the person that loves bringing people together, loves hooking other people up, but doesn't have any desire for it for myself. Just this whole, like, I guess like a
more of a deeper level of,
yeah,
of you.
A funner side. Like, some of it, it's not all like white picket fence serious songs. You know, there's like, I love a good brunch drunk. Like, I think that's hilarious.
Well, and you've always had in general the same sense of humor, and that never really came out. So I think part of coming into your own and then into our dynamic, I think it makes more sense going this route directionally.
Yeah, I think it's good. As a writer myself, I've learned that you write first and think later, you know?
Yeah.
And not everything has to be perfect. You know,
see, for me, I think first and write later.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can
explain that to me.
Well, I can never have a thought and then immediately put it on paper. It almost scares me, especially if I really like the thought. It's going to sit there for a really long time.
That scares the crap out of me. Like, if I have a good idea, I don't want to wait, you know? I want to get at it right away.
Yeah.
Because I lose a lot of that initial process when I do get a good idea for a song. You know, I already have those previous thoughts to get there in my head. And if I wait, I'm going to forget all of that. So I need to write.
I think you've got a good point. There's some magic in the first moments when you first come up with an idea where you haven't overthought it and maybe you can just like spitball. And so that's when I'll turn on like a voice memo on my phone and just like, I'll go for a few minutes and come up with, you know, talk about the hook and then talk through any ideas that relate to it and whether they rhyme or whether they make sense or not, whether they ever make it into the song or not. But then it might sit for a while, until I can get in a room with someone who I feel is going to connect with it.
I think it's good to let a song sit.
Yeah.
I really do. I've come back on stuff that I thought was complete crap before, and vice versa when I thought it was really good, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And you come back to it, I'm like, oh, this doesn't make any sense anymore because, you know, I wrote as soon as I came up with that idea, you know? And everything was there, but then when I write it down, it doesn't make sense to me later. And I'm like, well, how is this going to make sense to anybody else hearing it for the first time? They're not going to have...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I have to, for me, remove some of the emotion from it. It's just too personal for me. Like, songwriting is so devastatingly close to who I am that it's like... It's like a fire that you know you want to play with, but I can't play with it until it, like, simmers a little bit. And that's how every song for me is. And I know people that, like, they have to take their idea right away, and I have just never been that person. And I might get, like, a part of a melody, but almost as soon as I like an idea, I have to make sure there's a co-writer on it. Because I think that's sort of like, you know, I know so many people that write songs completely by themselves, and everybody has their song that they've written by themselves, but I trust my co-writers anyway, and our co-writers to have better ideas and a better understanding of how to universally explain the idea. I'm never really anymore just writing a song for me. I'm writing a song initially for me, but the end goal is, you know, to help someone or for someone to connect with it. You know, everybody remembers that song that, like, saved their life, and that sounds so ridiculous, but it's very true. You know, I mean, I think that for me is always like the fear. And I don't, if I have a really great idea, I do not trust it to my hands alone anymore. And maybe that's just very Nashville of me, but it just, I don't. I know I'm not a good enough writer yet. And I always say yet because you have no idea how this ends. And you might, who knows, like, where you can carry a skill. But I think it was one of Brad Paisley's writers that we were listening to talk at some point, and it may not have been him, but I've listened to tons and tons of songwriters, and I've been to tons of workshops, and I remember one writer saying, I never don't co-write. And he's like, I never write a song alone anymore. And I just was thinking back, and I was like, yeah, why would you? The greatest songwriters in the world live here. And like, it is very, very naive of me to think that I'm going to outwrite, you know. And like, for me right now, it's Hardy. Like, I cannot write it better than he can right now. He is a better storyteller.
When you say outright, what do you mean by that?
Like, I'm not going to be able to top the lyrics. And there's like this guy, Ryan Somerset.
Sorsted.
And he's from Canada. We've written with him, and I'll have like these ideas, or Josh will have an idea, the few times we've written with him, and it has been like a stroke of genius for me to watch him twist the lyric or take the idea and think of something totally different. And so I just always want that perspective. I want someone to challenge me. You know, it's like outrun someone, outthink someone. You know, people can outwrite people.
Well, and I mean, you get into a room with different people with different strengths, and I don't know why I'd never thought of this idea before, or this concept of co-writing, but someone explained it. It might have been Barbara, but someone explained it pretty recently where they said, if you're in a co-write and you've got people who are disagreeing about a lyric or a way to do something, a lot of times it can feel frustrating, but look at it from the perspective of, if you get a line that three or four people agree on, it's that much stronger than something you wrote with yourself or you wrote with one other person, because you've got something that multiple people, different people from different perspectives are all agreeing this is the best way to go move forward with that song. Mm-hmm. So it's that much more solid when you get finished with a piece of art.
Yeah, if I totally agree. If you're in the right room with people that you have some kind of connection with.
But you have to be willing to put yourself in rooms that you're not going to connect with.
I understand that, but as far as the writing process goes, I've been in rooms with people that I don't
connect with,
and it's that can really ruin the co-writing mindset. Like, it's definitely another, I view it as another instrument or muscle you have to flex and work out, because it's totally different than writing with yourself. And it's not only you, not necessarily conceding with other people, but finding a common ground with other people.
Sure.
And also, you have to get along and put your ego down on the floor while everyone's there. And so it's a whole another thing. You can't just I can't speak for everybody, but I can't just sit with somebody and have a great time co-writing unless it's somebody I get along with, just talking.
I don't know how to find my co-writers without finding my ones that aren't a fit. And so, for me, I would say 90% of the write, him and I write regularly. And by regularly, I mean 3 to 5 times a week, plus we tour. And we write amongst ourselves. But formally, I would say 3 to 5 times a week, we are making ourselves sit down with some other human and write a song. And the amount of, times we've gotten a song we would ever cut out of it or what, it's minimal. Yeah. I mean, 3 out of 100? Yeah.
Eventually you find your people, you find those fits, but
the relationships along the way are crazy.
You kiss a lot of frogs.
Yeah, but some of the friendships that I've made in a co-write where you just know the song isn't going to be the end all, but man, if you're releasing a single with someone else, they are at your show and vice versa. There's a type of camaraderie that exists in this town that, it's funny because it used to be me against Nashville. And I feel like when you get here, you're just I got to conquer Nashville. I got to do this to make it. And now it's just man, if I don't make it with these people, it's not worth it. It's these people are coming. It's a whole thing now to me. And so songwriting has taken on a whole different journey of friendship, relationships, intimacy, conflict, everything that happens in those rooms. And it doesn't happen without the really bad. And I consistently put myself in the bad situations because the good ones are, it's just unreal. When you get a brunch drunk and you walk away and you play it at a round and a really respected writer in town was no matter what happens, that's the first hit you've ever written. That's a great feeling. So it's that far outweighs those 5 other terrible writes I had that day that I had great lunches with. Who doesn't love Chewies? So I think that's, for me, it's the bigger picture.
Do you view co-writing as a way to create a better song or to better a business?
It depends.
Let me ask you that. It's a tough question to answer, I think.
No, I don't think it's difficult at all. I think that is truly situational. I think that's saying, do you view every time you go to lunch with another person as a way to build a relationship or as a way to build a business? And I think we've been in both situations, all of us, our entire lives. Lunch has meant a million different things other than just eating. So
in this town, it's coffee.
You have
right, my bad. Can we get coffee? Just to be clear, I don't want to date you. I just want to write a song, man. I think it depends on the room, and I think the energy shifts naturally one way or another pretty quick. And I don't think building a business is ever the way to look at it. Like I said, this has taken on like a different level of intimacy, and I don't mean in the sexual sense. Like, I mean in the true, genuine, unadulterated relationships with other people. Like, I, songwriters are my people. That we're manic depressive. Half of us are on antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds, and we're all like flying our freak flag proud, like, hey, I'm pretty messed up. The very thing that makes me great makes me just a little bit damaged. Like, it's impossible not to fall in love with the people in those rooms for different reasons. That's what I think. I don't think that's about a business. Like, that's to me like a literal unadulterated connection with a human every day that you get to have just a little piece of that the rest of the world, like, I don't know that I'd get that as a banker. Maybe I would. Maybe that's how, like, my relationships would always go, but they might think I'm a little creepy if I told them about my antidepressants.
Well, and they were someone talking about songwriting is like the only profession or vocational pursuit of any type that where you get in a room and you have to share your deepest, whether it's your deepest secrets or deepest demons or like whatever you're struggling with that day or that month or that year. You can go work in a cubicle somewhere and for 5 years and right next to your neighbor over here and, you know, never know more than a few basic facts about them. But you get in a room with someone in Nashville and sit down, you might shoot the breeze for 10 minutes and then it's like, all right, how are you feeling today? What's going on? What can we write about? And how can we take your emotions and pull them out of you and, you know, bare your soul?
Yeah.
Do you think you have to do that in order to
Again, write I think that it's kind situational. I think you have people like Taylor Swift where the biggest, like, and this is such a cliche example, but it is the biggest example where you have someone that writes so completely honestly. I don't care. People can say whatever they want, but like, I had a sick mother for a year. My parents were in a terrible car accident. My dad didn't live, and my mom has lived a half-life existence of struggling her way back to any normal, like, type of living for the last year. And she wrote this song called, like, what is it? You'll Get Better or something like that. And it's, you know, her mother's also ill. And so, like, I can connect with every feeling that's in that song, and there's no way, like, you could fake that. And so I think if you want to be the biggest writer, the biggest superstar in the world, you absolutely have to be willing to go there. I don't think you have to go there every day. Some days are not your day. So, like, I think about when we sit down, like, with a friend or someone that we know we write, maybe we write decent with, maybe it's not even great, we just know we write okay with, and they're feeling something, like, it's not your day. It's your day to help tell a story. It's your day to help. It's not your day. So, like, that's that person's day in the co-write. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, not every emotion that you come into their soul bearing is necessarily a, quote, negative or a sad
no.
thing.
Yeah,
like, exactly. It, brunch drunk came from
very real experience,
shared experience, field work, emotion in a sense.
Uh-huh. But
like, it comes from a sad place to that somebody.
It could, you know,
but
yeah.
Yeah, it, yeah, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a song once called God Bless China. And I already talked about it, but I'm telling you guys that it came from a very, very sad place.
Yeah.
We were broke. And, you know, it was about God bless China for helping us out.
Yeah.
And I, over a year, I kind of let it sit. And I made it more funny.
Yeah.
At the end. Because it is, it came from a terrible place. But the hook is funny.
Yeah, you know? I love it.
And I don't know where I was, that's what the brunch drunk thing.
Yeah.
Like, that probably, at some point, that somebody felt bad.
Maybe.
You know, after they were stopped feeling good. You
oh,
know, at,
yeah.
At brunch, you know?
It's a hair of the dog song,
and,
for
but,
sure.
But it's funny. It really yeah. is. As songwriters go, and performers, they kind of, I don't want to say bring light to the darkness, because that's
totally.
Not always good. But sometimes it's needed.
Yeah, right? And I mean, we'll probably release a love song on this next project thing we're doing, but the majority of it will be party songs, because it's like, after you lose a parent, the only thing that you don't, like, for me, I cannot sit in the room every day and give that part of me. I can do it once a month, and that's okay. That's a great place to start. I'm willing to go there because I am committed in a way to songwriting that I've never, as my ex would tell you, if anything gets in the way of music, you know, how dare it? And it's funny now, and speaking of a dark humor, like, he just was like, I've never seen you love anything the way that you love country music. And it was so annoying to me for him to say that, but it is true. It's like so near and dear to my heart that, yeah, I'm willing to go there for it, but you don't have to go there every day.
Why do you like country music?
For me, and maybe now it's a mission, I think the reasons have changed for sure over the years. In the beginning, it was just such a part of the way I was raised.
Mm-hmm. For me, that was the only station we got.
Yeah, same. So, oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we listened to Christian music, hashtag Carmen. hashtag Carmen, right? Who's in the house? JC.
Yeah, you ever get the... Are you talking about what's his name? Carmen.
Carmen, as far as I know.
Is that what?
Yeah.
Did you ever get the, like, his kids' VHSs?
Like
Carmen Yo Kids, yeah, is what it was called.
Yeah. No, but that, wow. Woof. Maybe I did. I don't know. Maybe
he had, like, he told, like, the David and Goliath story with songs and stuff like that.
Yeah. We were really big Salty the Songbook thing fans. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, that was in our church library too.
Yeah,
we print out.
We just recently were in the studio finishing up vocals for Brunch Drunk, right?
Yeah.
And, we looked on the wall, and the guy who owned the studio had recorded all the Salty the Songbook stuff.
I was like, Mom, we made it.
There were, like, gold records from, like, there was, like, Eminem, there was, like, a Waylon thing, and then there was Salty the Songbook.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
awesome.
I was taking pics. Like, I showed my mom the Waylon thing, but she wasn't nearly as impressed as Salty the Songbook. She's like, now that is making it. So, yeah.
Yeah, as far as country music goes, what draws you to country music as opposed to more than...
Again, I think it turned into a little bit of a mission. I remember growing up, I was always so weird. Like, and I think it's funny because I've heard, like, Cassie Ashton and so many different people, like, go on the record of saying, like, I was just always weird. And I never really had one group of friends. I never really found my, like, spot. But I really, really was a shining star at agriculture. I was, you know, great at 4-H, really enjoyed showing horses, showing cattle, and I just, like, was just so obsessed with that way of living. And my brother was so cool, you know? He played, like, every sport, and I'm out here, like, with jockey pants on. And I just... in theater, like, you know, I shot myself in the foot. Show choir was, like, my jam. Traveling show choir, even better. I just remember thinking that there was, had to be some way, like, those two worlds collided, and then really started, like, then you find out who Dolly Parton is, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is everything in one human. Mm-hmm. Like, she's literally from nowhere, but she is, like, a theater princess. So I just became, like, really obsessed with how to mirror marry the two ideas. And it was just, like, that's just country music. Like, there's an honesty to it. I didn't ever have to be anything that I wasn't. I don't know. Like, and I also remember my dad's, like, a, I don't even know what generation farmer. They've owned farms for years. And, but my dad started farming really, really young and buying farmland really young. And I just, like, thought in the beginning how hard it was for him to make ends meet. And you don't know this stuff until later. And I just remember thinking, like, people are, like, literally making a whole living out of telling these stories. And I lived them. I wouldn't have to go in a room and manufacture anything. It'd be pretty legit. So as soon as I started coming down here, there's a lot of non-legit. So that was heartbreaking. Well, once you like saw past the red curtain and the backstage disappointed you, there was this whole other world of people that were still really, really, really fighting hard for the origin of what country music was supposed to be, which is this organic type of storytelling. And I think, again, you know, I don't know what his background is, but I think that you have writers like Hardy coming in and launching artists like Morgan Wallen, and everyone's just like so shocked that this man with a mullet and a cutoff is like killing it on stage. And it's just like, what do you mean? Middle America is starved. They can't always relate to your Maren Morris. They don't have glitter jumpsuits. Like, Maren Morris is a phenomenal artist, but there is a whole portion of middle America that will never, that are struggling to understand the pop industry. And so you have this, like, Joe Dirt looking character singing these, like, relatable songs, and it's suddenly they've launched this, like, whole thing that no one thought of. And it's just like, I can remember thinking the space for Morgan Wallen existed long before Morgan Wallen came along.
Yeah.
So I think there's, like, it's a bit of a ballad for the middle class.
It's
like,
a big space.
Yeah, it's a big space.
Big space for that.
And I'm really excited to see, you know, I think Brad Paisley did a cool job of it.
In his own way.
Yeah. And it's just, to me, in a really exciting part of, like, era of country music, whether we get, like, a huge footprint in it or not, I'm going to be at every Hardy show because I think that's cool. And I think that's awesome, and I want to root on that type of songwriting. I think Rednecker Than You is the funniest slapstick song on radio right now, and if not, it's not on your playlist, like, you should know it. It's just hilarious. Mm-hmm. So, to me, I'm just really passionately in it right now.
Do you ever listen to Brandi Clark?
Yeah, of course.
One of my favorite, I guess she's country, really.
Yeah, isn't I think she? I would say and heavily.
I really see her more as just a songwriter, you know? And there, I have quite a few of my favorite artists I see as songwriters.
Totally. So,
but, you know, she has a song called, I can't remember what it's called anymore. It's about a woman going up an elevator. It's on the 12 Stories album. A woman going up the elevator to cheat on her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I heard that, I was like, I'm not even a woman, and I got chills.
Yeah.
Like, because it's her thought process going up through there. The line is, he's 10 floors up waiting there with champagne and candlelight. What'll keep me out of heaven will take me there tonight. And I was just like, oh, that's such a good line.
Yeah.
She's such a good writer. I love her perspective on the way she goes about it. Presenting it,
mm-hmm.
presenting her ideas, and I it's just simple. There's no like fluff or anything. She has a good voice. I wouldn't say it's like Beyonce level.
Well,
I know you know like what I mean. Level. Like you don't need to be like that. That song, she doesn't do like extravagant melodies and stuff right. like that. And I just think. I love that kind of simple.
Well, I mean, it's look about at Casey the Musgraves. Look, yeah. Like, those lyrics yeah. are just so incredible.
Yeah.
And they've been, I love the thing, the project, top to bottom. And when you say, like, do you look at it as a business or do you look at it as, like, a relationship or an art? I think it's all of those things to be yeah. successful. I don't think you're any more going to be great without every single part of it. And the cool thing about Casey Musgraves to me is you hear all the stories, and I don't know them personally. I know that she's pretty genuine, but what they did was they took something so genuine and they made it genuine from top to bottom. And I think that that's just like, how can you not get on board with that? I think about like Luke Bryan, and I cannot believe that someone would think that's not country when that man will duck blind deer hunt fish you under the table. And to me, like, that's my country. That's not everyone else's country. That is my experience of country. That is how I was raised. Mm-hmm. So I can remember, you know, those few times where you remember exactly where you're at on a road or in a house when you, the first time you hear a song. And I can remember there's this old Luke Bryan song called We Rode in Trucks. Yeah. And I can remember the exact mile marker on a road that I was on because I was like, holy cow, I don't know anything about this dude. What a weird voice. But I connect with every single word. And so, like, I think he gets a lot of crap because I think that he would take your whatever these people want to call country, which to me feels like a ballad singer-songwriter song is now what we're calling true country with a steel guitar. If that's what you want to call country, that's fine. If that's your country, that's your thing. But, like, I connected with every word of that, so it's really hard for me to be like, you know what? That's not my country. So that just doesn't make sense to
me. You view country music more with the lyrics than the music.
I think there is a huge thing in favor of that, whether I think it or not. I think you're watching an industry say, yes, that is what country is. Because you're watching an industry mm-hmm. say, that sounds okay as long as you put this in it. Lyrically.
Yeah.
So I think it doesn't really that matter what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sonically, that is the rule we're playing with now.
Well, and at this point, like, country music's changed what country music was so many times over the past 100 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the 50s, it was something mm-hmm. completely different than it was in the 70s or the
80s. And, yeah. Pop music used to be the Beatles, too. I mean, every genre has done that. Yeah.
Garth Brooks wasn't country when he came out.
Yeah.
And I've heard that people said Johnny Cash wasn't country when he came. Like,
yeah.
It's every generation's going to say
yeah.
something similar and want things back the way they were. Think, too, about the fact, like, literally the name country music and what it represented and... For a while, it was, you know, the cowboy songs and things like that's not nearly what the majority of America is anymore.
Yeah.
Like, America, it like country music is, you know, it's worldwide now. It's
Mr. Worldwide.
Out, but it's very much.
There's no need for that.
other than taking the roots, I mean, which it came from. Like multiple sources, and you can bring in like
it was never a pure genre.
Yeah, it was an Irish, like there was Irish immigrant yeah. songs. There were there were a lot of different cultural things and folk songs that came in and melded into what country music was, mm-hmm. and it's very much an American idea of music. And when you look at what America is now. Country, like, it we're culturally a different. So, what does it mean to describe where we live now? Maybe yeah. the core audience of country music. What does it mean to describe that? And what does that sound like?
Yeah.
And would it be right or genuine to represent that the same way that it was represented 50 right. years ago?
Last year, Bud Light. This year, White Claw. And that's an easier rhyme as far as I'm concerned.
I know some of my favorite artists. I like when I listen to their album the first time. I like the deeper cuts a lot more than what they play.
Yes.
And that's what made me fall in love and buy more albums.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me buying new albums, to hear the cuts they don't play on the radio.
Yeah, and you have now, fortunately, the flip side of that is you have people like Emily Wiseman now that are these phenomenal songwriters that are getting the chance through just their songwriting to really express and release something of their own. And I respect Emily Wiseman in the sense of, you know, and I'm going to paraphrase, but her saying, like, she didn't feel like she had anything to say before, and now she does, and so she's putting out music. So, like, this songwriting avenue has opened her ability to be able to say things as an artist. So, like, there is an alternative outlet, and there are places that music's really, really winning right now. But I just want to see, like, less flashes in the pan and more, like, this is our artist, and this is... I'm going to mortgage my house over this. Mm-hmm. This is how much I believe in this idea.
We'd all love to have a flash in the pan, though.
It's not loud.
I wouldn't. What's the point?
To get started?
That's if it's to saying, get started. That's the difference.
Fizzles out, yeah. Like you're talking but from the songwriter.
I was talking about a songwriter.
Like yeah. I mean,
get a
I
cut?
Guess.
Yeah.
I have this argument. My mom and I have like talked about this every time, and what I love about her is she still has a naivety to the business in the sense that, don't get me wrong, there's nothing about my mom naive, but she hasn't had to live behind the curtain so long. She still thinks like when the curtain goes down, it's really pretty and it's fun and she's really excited to see the show. When you live behind the curtain, that's sort of a sick life because like you never get to see the front of the curtain. And so like it's hard. I'm jaded in some senses because I live backstage. And my mom still gets to see the curtain. So my mom will always say, why would you let someone cut this song? If it could change their life that much, why wouldn't you keep it for you? And so like I love that part about my mom and I love that feeling. And again, that's different on the songwriter side than it is the artist side, but there is that like, okay, you get this one cut and then like you help better someone else's career. I don't know that that's the right or wrong move. It's just a very like refreshing. I love to hear my mom say fight for to keep a song after we've had a hold or interest in a hold. Like, I love that. I want to hear that more.
Yeah. Do you know the writers want to give them credit or anything?
Yeah, they're great humans. Yeah. Hate them.
The writers were Priscilla Block, Sarah Jones, and then Kate and I.
Okay.
It's coming out October 25th.
Yeah, we were going to do it as a summer release, but this song has just turned into its own animal. It's one of those ones where I don't know that we wouldn't have released it, but I don't know. It wasn't on the high. It's like anything. When you write something and then you play it out, it's never on the high priority, and it was just so nice to see people so into a song. And then it became this baby of mine and Josh's where it was just like, no one touches Brunch Drunk. And then it was put on hold. And then there was like this sadness because it was like my mom saying, don't let this song be held. And then you're like, oh, but also this could launch our career like as a songwriter. But eventually it just became this like, why would we not release this song? So we finally recorded it and... it was produced by Blaine Mitchell and Butter is what he goes by. Butter of Trailer Choir. Butter of... that just sounds like a Game of Thrones name.
Butter of Trailer Choir.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Your lovely wife gave me my first cotton candy eyeshadow palette or whatever mix-up. Upstairs mix-up.
So... I guess we haven't really clearly said this yet, but so I do hair and makeup. Kate has a couple of people, but I'm one of the people that she rotates.
She my main.
That I get to do hair and makeup for Kate. And the Brunch Drunk photo shoot by far is probably the most exciting, amazing photo shoot I've ever been on.
It could have been a wash.
But it played out like, the images are out, right? So I can describe
because
this will make people go find them. So just for, so you know, there was like 3 dozen donuts. Mm-hmm. Kate was in like a very beautiful pastel, multicolored, like.
Erica Matucci was the real deal.
Beautiful dress. Josh was in like a suit-ish situation.
A sequin suit.
Cool. And
a wife beater.
There were confetti champagne bottles. And Kate got up on a bar and laid down in like the most beautiful makeup I've ever done and just squished a chocolate icing donut in her face and ate it like a ravenous dog.
It was like a dream shoot.
It was honestly the most beautiful thing I've ever been
about. And that's the part where it's not work. And I felt bad for Logan Christopher shot it, and I felt bad for him because he's already such a creative, And I was just like, this is how this shoot's going to be. Like, it's going to look like this, and then it's going to be here, and it's going to be like this. And, like, he's such a good sport. And so were you. I could see you die a little when I put the donut in my face.
It was worth it. The image, yeah. I mean, that image is on a t-shirt, correct? Like, yeah. A tank top. Mm,
yep.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, anytime my work ends up on a t-shirt, I get excited.
Right, you're like, have made
like,
it.
Like, whatever.
I have fine. Made it.
I have made it. But, yeah, it was a pretty, that was a fun morning. I love that.
And we're doing the video shoot November, go for it. Josh, you're the date guy.
It's November 13th.
Yep. Yeah. On a Wednesday, we're going to be posting stuff about it on our socials, but we definitely want as many people to come out as possible. It's going to be a brunch show. Drunk, a real big shit show, right. But this is exciting. It's an exciting time. Like, we finally get, I feel like it's been a long, long year of darkness, and this is like... Maybe in some ways you can see it in the art, but it really feels like the brightening of some things. Like, I've never been, like, a pastels and rainbow kind of person in a shoot ever, but I just was like, this song is ridiculous. If the artwork isn't ridiculous, it doesn't make sense to me.
Failed it.
Yeah, I have failed the song.
I'm just curious, what's the first line of the song?
I've got a hell of a hangover hanging over from last night.
All right, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like an ode to the bridesmaids. I love the bridesmaids in Nashville. I think everyone hating on them, like, they just can't have a good time, because I have a better time if those bridesmaids are at the bar. They are the life of the party.
100%, and they love everyone.
And they're so happy to be in Nashville. And, like, I remember my first times being in Nashville, and the first time, I think, was in a bridal party. And I was just like, this town is everything.
Wait, so you were a bachelorette at one point?
Yep.
Wow.
I know. There were tears.
I mean, they love the culture of the bridal parties. Like, I just was on a movie, and we had our wrap party Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like, and it happened to be downtown. And I thought for sure on a Sunday night we weren't going to see any bachelorettes.
Oh, no, they're alive and well.
Not girl.
Yeah.
And they love to love.
Right.
They want to tell you, like, if you're not feeling good about yourself, I think going out and letting those bachelorettes tell you, girl, you look hot tonight. Or, like, I like that eyeshadow. Or,
I like your unapologetic sash and matching t-shirts.
Yeah,
like,
I love them too. I also have a sweet space in my heart for them.
I
don't want to be stuck behind them on their trolley when I'm trying to get
But I've also been on that same trolley, and damn, it was fun.
Well, speaking of which, I feel like almost more than radio play or something like that, what I really want for this song is to be played on every pedal tavern.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like it's
hashtag
a pedal tavern.
Life goals.
Pedal tavern
anthem. Hell yeah.
Sure.
I wonder if there's like a day, like, we should talk. Like, I wonder if there's a way you could, like, contact them.
I feel like there has to be, I don't know. I have, like, really, really high hopes for this song in it taking it whatever life it's supposed to.
It will.
On, I'm really proud of it. And I, it's funny because someone on our team had reached out to someone about the brunch drunk shoot, and they had said something about this is going to be very polarizing for this particular band. And I had thought about it, and they were like, you know, people are either going to love this song or hate this song. And, like, what a great honor to make polarizing art.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't, like, that to me felt like such, that's the highest compliment someone could give me. And I know it was supposed to scare me, but it was fuel to a fire. So I'm just like, let's do this. Let's make it as big as ever. Let's order gumball champagne to send to media, and then it end up being six lists. I mean, my God, let's go.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, think Toby Keith Red Solo Cup.
One of the best songs ever, and I love the Warren Brothers.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those men can write, like, a ballad and then turn around and write Red Solo Cup. And I don't know if they, like, live with Tim McGraw or close to, but whatever they do as writers, I want to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You can have it back. That it? We got fire at the grill?
Is there anything you guys wanted to...
That's add? It.
That's it.
HastingCo.com?
HastingCo.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
At Hasting and Co. Yeah, HastingCo.com.
Let's try to say that without clipping the mic.
Cool.
So the website is www.hastingco.com.
Our socials are all at Hasting and Co. HASTINGANDCO. Follow along.
I do want to say this. This may not make the podcast, but I work with a lot of musicians, and few work as hard as these two.
Thank you.
They are committed to doing things with every ounce of themselves. So,
including to getting in a trailer.
They jump in a Hornet-filled trailer to get the shot.
Like my wife just said, please go support them. They are great people. You can buy their stuff on iTunes. You can go follow them on Instagram. Kate wanted me to let you know that the release date for Brunch Drunk is coming up October 25th. And anyone is welcome to be in their video they talked about. It's the Brunch Drunk video, November 3rd. If you want to be in that video, message him on Instagram at Hasting and Co. That's HASTINGANDCO. I'd love for you all to hear their song Brunch Drunk, but since this episode came out a month before it was released, we couldn't play it. But this song is just as good. This is their latest single they wrote with the Swan Brothers. You can get it on iTunes or wherever. This is One by Hasting and Co.
Friday, this bar is finally filling up. Heads down, phones out, looking for the next hookup. Everyone's got someone and someone on the side. But I've been looking at you, girl, and I got something else in mind. I just need one. One song, one dance, one drink with you. Just one, one kiss. Baby, could change everything. Took 100 shots on any yard lights. Took 100 bombs to get one right. Everybody's looking for somebody to love, but I don't want everybody. But I ain't looking for a one-night stand. I know you've heard this a thousand times, but I ain't that kind of man. Share a cab, can I get your number? Baby, give this a chance. My hands on your hips, I can tell right now I'm gonna wanna do this again. I just need one.
One song, one dance, one drink with you. Just one, one kiss. Baby, could change everything. Took 100 shots under the yard line. 100 bombs to get one right. Everybody's looking for somebody to love, but I don't want everybody. I just need one.
Ooh, baby, you're the one.
I just need one.
Ooh, baby, you're the one.
I just need one. I just need one. One song, one dance, one drink with you. Just one, one kiss. Baby, could change everything. Took 100 shots under neon lights. Took 100 wrongs to get one right. Everybody's looking for somebody to love, but I don't want everybody.
Brought to you by Put Them in a Song, in collaboration with MBI Studios. All guests know they are being recorded and are willing to be. All music and songs are created and scored by PutThemInASong.com. You can follow the Root Note Podcast at Root Note Pod on Twitter. If you would like to have a song or music created for you or a loved one, visit PutThemInASong.com, where you have a better voice than you think. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Root Note. Thank you.